AI is not replacing pen testers. It's not replacing hackers. It's not replacing, you know, the blue team or the purple team or the red team. It's like, it's not there yet. And I think we're very close to being a little bit disingenuous with where that reality is.
Welcome back to Trust Versus, a podcast provided by HITRUST, global leader of cybersecurity assurance. I'm Robert Booker, strategy officer at HITRUST.
And I'm Jeremy Huval, innovation officer with HITRUST. Today we're talking to FC, otherwise known as Freaky Clown. He's co-founder and co-CEO of a cybersecurity company called Sygenta. And he's an author of a book that I really liked called How I Rob Banks and Other Things, that focuses on his ethical hacking and ethical penetration testing, physical penetration testing specifically, where he, you guessed it, robs banks and breaks into buildings and helps companies figure out where their physical security weaknesses are.
Yeah, and you know, it's no secret to all of our friends that listen to Trust Versus that the topic of AI and AI security and AI risk management has been top of mind for us this year. It's a journey, Jeremy, you and I are both working on together with our work here at HITRUST, but also just a subject that is so fascinating and so interesting. And I think when we came to know of FC and you had read his book and knew of his reputation, he had this perspective on AI risk and how AI could, at least as we imagine the discussion, could really be an enabler for the attackers, for those that want to do bad to people, and something we really needed to have a handle on, which is, you know, why it was great to have the conversation with him. And you had this conversation, and I think it was just fascinating as you explored the topic with him.
Yeah, and I came into the conversation really wanting to understand how AI, specifically generative AI, is helping the bad guys be bad. Not to say that FC's a bad guy, but uses the same tools as the hackers, the unethical hackers in his ethical penetration testing engagements. And so I thought, who better to talk to about how the hackers are using AI than a hacker? And it's something that if you watch the news and look for any AI security content once in Google, you will be bombarded with news articles saying, you know, AI, there's all these evil language models out there, and AI is going to be the doom and gloom of all of our security programs. So we said, let's really understand how true that is and how accurate is that the AI, generative AI tooling is really becoming pervasive on the bad guy side of things. And it was good to hear in this conversation that that wasn't necessarily the case. You hear us talk about social engineering and open source intelligence gathering. And I really ask about, you know, AI's impact on the tooling for the penetration testing. I learned a lot. It was a pretty cool conversation.
Yeah, I look forward to hearing it. Let's get into it.
So hi, FC. Thanks for joining and spending time with us. So excited to have you. We're big fans of your book. Why don't you start off and tell us a little bit about yourself and the kind of work you do.
Okay. Well, thanks for having me, Jeremy. It's a great pleasure to be here. So my name is FC, aka Freaky Clown. I am an ethical hacker, and I have been for the last 30 years. I'm probably best known for my work in the physical side of cybersecurity. So physically breaking into stuff, robbing stuff out of companies, like, you know, helicopters and people and gold bars. That's what I'm mostly known for, but most of my work is actually on the technical side, like the ethical hacking side, breaking into places.
Yeah, and you recently attended DEF CON and Black Hat. You judged an event this year and last year that relates to what we're going to talk about today. The focus of our conversation will be about sort of weaponized AI and helping artificial intelligence tools, LLM maybe most prominently lately, but ML in general, is helping attackers attack with maybe more efficiency or opening up new ways to attack. And so you judge an event at DEF CON that relates to this.
So my background, to give everyone listening a little bit more on me, is I was the head of offensive cyber research for Raytheon Defense. Huge defense firm, and we did some really interesting things. Part of that was dabbling with AI. Before it became this huge thing, once ChatGPT became public and then everyone was using these LLMs for doing stuff, it's a fascinating growing area, right? And I think there is some dissonance that we have to discuss between what people expect, what the media are saying, and what the actual reality of these things are. So the competition that was at DEF CON was basically, is AI good enough to replace social engineers on the phone? And the obvious answer is no, it's not. Right? And that's the same across the board, right? AI is not replacing pen testers. It's not replacing hackers. It's not replacing, you know, the blue team or the purple team or the red team. It's like, it's not there yet. And I think we're very close to being a little bit disingenuous with where that reality is. People are being a bit scaremongery about it. They're putting out a lot of FUD out there about it. So I'd like to like sort of just bring everyone's expectations down a little bit. Like it's a great tool. It's a force multiplier for people that have skills, and it's a barrier to entry lower for those people that don't have the skills. That's where AI is at the moment, right? You're not getting unsophisticated script kiddies or criminal gangs that don't know anything and doing sophisticated nation state level stuff, right? It's just not, that's not where we are right now.
Yeah, and I think that's true for maybe all contexts. Like I'm thinking about software development. Like I'm not going to write the next SAP just with a prompt on some LLM. I have to know how to develop software first, and maybe it'll help me be better at my job, faster at my job. Maybe it'll give me a starting point for writing that next class, but it won't write the entire application.
Yeah, it's not there for production level, right? It's there. I use ChatGPT, for example, on a bunch of things, but you have to know what you need to ask it, right? You need to explain it like I'm five to the bot, and it will sometimes get caught in a loop of not understanding what you're trying to say. So yeah, I do use it, and I'm sure other hackers do use it as, I need a specific tool to do this particular thing. How do I do that? And it'll write your little Python code, and that'll be fine. If you try and do anything too complex, then it gets a little bit confused and it can't do that. It's, again, I'll probably say this more than once, it's a force multiplier for the knowledge that you already have.
Yeah, okay. So talk to us about Cygenta, your cybersecurity company, sort of operates on three fronts, like a holistic cybersecurity. And if I've got it right, it's physical, digital, and human. Maybe we can talk about sort of the AI impact on each in terms of how you operate in those areas. But first, why all three? Help us bring into the mindset of why focus on all three, and then we'll dive into the AI piece.
So my wife and I started Cygenta because we saw there wasn't this connection between those three silos, right? So my background and my skill is in the digital side. I'm very well known for the physical side as well. My wife is literally world-class and has received an MBE for her work in the human side of cybersecurity. And at the time, you know, we were working on separate projects, doing different things, and we kept going to each other and be like, hey, how do you think about this? Or how would you go about attacking this? And we realized that we're collaborating more and more and more. And we're like, hang on, there's no company out there that has the expertise in these three silos that is working together. Because you go into a company and you say, right, we'll do a pen test of you, right? But that doesn't take into the business mitigations around the human side, right? So we have these three silos, like you said, it's the human, the physical, and the digital. And if you do not have good security in all three of them, you are at risk, right? Because if, let's say you spend $10 million on upgrading your digital cybersecurity, right? That's great. But if a person like me or an attacker can come in, physically break into your building and steal those servers, it doesn't matter how much you've spent on cybersecurity, right? I've still got your servers. And as soon as I have physical access to your machines, I'm going to get in. It's just a time thing. Same with, you know, the human side. If your humans are not trained to stop people or to look at things and be like, hang on, that looks suspicious before I do this money transfer, then it doesn't matter how much you've spent elsewhere, right? You can have the best doors and you can have the best digital cybersecurity, but if your humans are not trained to be that strong link, then you're going to get hacked. So it works for all of those. So we started Cygenta so that all three of those were available to each of our clients.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense. And in your book, you go into so many good examples of maybe war stories is a good representation.
Yeah, war stories is probably a bet. best way.
Well, you also talked in the intro about let's make this informative and entertaining. And I think you exceeded it both. I learned a lot and I had fun. It was a fun read. You mentioned social engineering is the number one attack used by criminals and has been for thousands of years. AI, I think, my speculation, and if what I'm researching is true, what I'm hearing is true, is AI is giving you more tools in your social engineering toolbox.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So we did a couple of demonstrations for some clients where we showed the power of AI to, again, sorry to say it again, to be a force multiplier, right? So we have done in the past open source intelligence on C-suites, right? Because they need to know what is out there for criminals to abuse, right? So we spend a week or two going through each person and be like, right, what is available for this person out there to be abused? And, you know, that it's a time-consuming thing. You have to dedicate a lot of time to it and you have to try and keep everything in your head and how it all sort of interacts with each other. And we did this demonstration of like, hang on, could AI, at its current place, replace that OSINT piece? And so we did this demonstration where we asked AI to do OSINT on myself and my wife and our company. And it did it in probably 2 or 3 minutes. Huge, huge impact on the time frame that we needed, right? So now you can start to script that against all of your targets. And it was fascinating because it was probably 80, 90% right on a lot of stuff, right? It got a few things wrong, which are very confusing. Like apparently I like to do skydiving as a hobby. I absolutely do not. I do not enjoy flying at all. I'm definitely not jumping out of a plane for joy. Whilst it's not accurate, it takes down that time that you need to perform those tasks, right? So within 3 minutes, you can get a fairly good thing and you can go through and you can double check what that result is, but you don't have to spend time going through everything and try and piece it all together. So it was absolutely fascinating. And then we took that and we said, hey, John, based on this OSINT report, which was beautifully formatted, by the way, with all the headings and it understood the idea of what we were trying to do. So based on this OSINT report that you have just created, create essentially a phishing email, right? And we gave it like no real direction. And so 10 seconds later, it had crafted a perfectly worded, perfectly good English and decent grammar, all of these manipulative phrases in it that we were able to like specify. And it was a really, really good phishing email. I almost guarantee that if it came through, we would probably be tempted to click it. So it is fascinating to see that and how quickly that happens. So you've gone from a time frame of a week and a bit and potentially not crafting a great email to under 10 minutes. Yeah, and then you could be sending out that email to your target. We're like, hang on, how can we use AI to help defend against this, right? Because that's what we're all trying to do. And this shows like the lack of intelligence, I would say, within AI, right? That this sort of self-awareness isn't there, because we followed on from that saying like, this is a great email. Great. Thanks for that. Now point out all of the red flags that highlight this could be a phishing email. And it went through, it analyzed everything that it had written and said, this is a red flag. This is a red flag. This is a red flag. I suspect this is a phishing email. And we're like, well, A, you wrote it, so it shows that there's no intelligence there whatsoever, but it shows that it can be used to analyze something simple like a phishing email and just be like, is this potentially a spear phishing email? And it's a force for good and bad, right? It's like any tool that you write, whether or not it's used for bad things or good things, it's down to who's using it.
Yeah, no, great point. And I think either probably you or your wife, I read a quote in one of your writings. I really liked it. It was about the psychology of fear in cybersecurity. The point was, if you're talking about something scary, and if you go heavy just on the threat without talking about the actions that they can take to control that threat, then people hearing it are going to fall back to emotion and sort of denial and not want to look at that bad thing. And so I love that you brought up, what can we do about knowing that this threat actor has better tools available We talked about phishing a bit, and obviously there's co-pilots for email clients that are going to come online to flag this kind of stuff. And I think for a long time, we've been using machine learning models to help screen spam and to screen phishing emails at, right? So that's nothing new, but bringing it into the local Outlook client, for example, to the Gmail client, and to flag that in real time is going to be one of those defenses among many, many others that we'll have to develop, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's all about giving everyone more tools to help defend things. Because another thing my wife likes to say is, you know, the right fish at the wrong time will catch anyone. Doesn't matter what other defenses. And then I back that up with, like, if someone clicks a link in your company, right? Because someone will, right? If you have 1,000 employees and you've got like 1%, because you'll never get it below that. Like, if you've got 1% of your employees clicking links accidentally, then you're in a world of hurt, right? But if someone clicking a link in an email is able to take down your entire network, you have bigger problems, right? You have a segmentation issue, right? It shouldn't be a flat network. You have other controls that you need to put in place, because cybersecurity is all about layers of security, right? You can't rely on just one thing. We can't rely on an LLM embedded into Outlook to protect us from everything, because it won't, right? It cannot do that 100% security. It doesn't exist. So you have that layer, and then you have another layer, and then you have another layer, so that you're protected throughout your company.
Yeah, no, great point. Great point. What about some of the other social engineering tools that are AI enabled? There's a lot of talk about deepfakes right now. CNBC.com posted earlier this year, the largest known case just in 2025, a Hong Kong finance worker was duped into transferring more than $25 million to fraudsters using deepfake technology who disguised themselves as colleagues on a video call. And these are just the ones we hear about. And so this is, talk to us about that.
Okay, right. So that's a fascinating area, right? So again, a lot of media attention is given to deepfakes, and they're being used by criminals for doing all these sorts of things. But criminals are lazy, right? And they'll go for the easiest route, right? So they don't need to necessarily make these really good AI-based deepfake video calls, right? That's one method. They're more likely to send you a phishing email, to be honest, right? But then you have to realize that sometimes the media reports all the bad stuff and doesn't really report too heavily on the good stuff, right? That we're making a lot of headway on this. In fact, a recent story was the Ferrari executive. Ferrari executive got a message, a deep faked call, I believe it was, pretending to be another executive, and like used all the red flags of, like, you know, we're doing this secret deal, we need to transfer money, all of this. And the executive at Ferrari was, again, he was trained, he was educated in all of this stuff. And he felt that there were enough like beige or slash red flags in this that he just simply asked the AI bot a really simple question, which was like, I just want to confirm it's you. So tell me what book you recommended that I read last week when we last spoke. And obviously they couldn't, right? Because they didn't have that insider knowledge. So this comes back to my wife's side, which is the human side, which is they are a really, really strong ally, right? There's no technical control that would have stopped that attack, right? So it relies heavily on the human being that point of, hang on, this doesn't feel right. We need to figure out a way of, you know, getting through this so that you know that isn't authentic.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. And it's almost scary from an individual as well as, you know, from a corporate citizen. It seems AI voice generated phone calls, spam calls are on the rise. And there's a lot of FUD out there where some families now have safe words. Like, if I get a call from grandma and she's been kidnapped and she's demanding a Bitcoin transfer, what's the safe word? Oh, you don't know it? I don't know that we should all go that far, but you know, it's happening to some people. And it's one of those examples, to your point earlier, of there's a lot of media attention focusing on a lot of the bad and a lot of the what can go wrong, because we know if it bleeds, it leads.
Sensationalism and bad things always sells papers. And that's, people have to remember that. So like both social media and general media, their business is trying to make money. So it's in there in their sort of favor to drum up that fear and uncertainty and doubt in people because it sells more papers. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. And in terms of what we've talked about so far, none of these are really too sophisticated of attacks, which sort of indicates that unsophisticated attackers have a maybe more approachable tool set to pull these things off. Let's talk about the impact of sort of AI on maybe the more technical toolkit. So when I used to do pen testing so many years ago, like, I don't know, Metasploit was big and like SE Toolkit and stuff like that. Are there now AI plugins or AI modules to some of the Kali Linuxes of the world that are changing the way you operate?
Not really. The reason for that is it's very hard to automate the gut feeling that you have when you're doing pen testing, right? And it's very easy to automate a bunch of other tests. So we don't realistically need a lot of AI help in that, right? You're either new to the whole thing and you don't know what you're trying to do. So you sort of fumble around a little bit. And so maybe you get to the stage where you're like, actually, I'm doing this constantly, so I'll automate that. And that automation doesn't necessarily require AI empowerment, right? And then when you get to the more senior level, you realize that automating things is probably not the best way either. You want to do slow, small, quiet attacks on things. And AI isn't particularly good at that either. So I'm not really seeing any real use for AI right now, right? The best use I think you'll see at the moment is stuff like very specific AI models built for like pen testing. I'm not going to name a couple of the ChatGPT clones that pen testers are using, but there are a few out there and they're pretty good. It's like, how do I use this tool to do this thing, right? Because if you use that on a general AI model, it'll say, I'm not allowed to tell you how you'd exploit this. But there are ones without those safeguards and it will tell you how to do this exploitation. But again, you need to understand what it is that you're asking them. So we're not seeing it at the scale that people are worried about yet.
And you said that vulnerabilities don't really change, haven't changed in 25 years. The scale of those changes. Is it safe to say that AI is even increasing that scale of these changes?
Yeah. I think one of the biggest things, I've been in this industry a very long time, right? And the types of attacks, you don't get new types of attack anymore. You just get different delivery methods and different ways of doing it and different scales of doing it. One of the biggest threats I think I've seen grow in all of these years is standardization, right? That's the killer thing, I think, that a lot of people miss out on, right? Because back in the day, like, sort of the 80s, 90s, you would have some company that would have a crazy system that was bespoke to them, and it had, everything was custom written for them, right? So unless you know about that specific use case or whatever it is they're using, that piece of hardware, that piece of code, there's no way you're getting into it. You can't spray the internet and go like, all right, find me all of these particular machines because there's only four, right? and then you move through time and then like more and more standards come in and they're like, okay, everyone's just using standard version of Linux. It's not customized in any way. And everyone's using the same ports and everyone's using the same, sort of connectors on these devices. So I know if I break into a building, I could probably plug a USB stick in. Right, I don't have to create some custom hardware device to interface with this machine. So, it's a fascinating area. It really is. I think standardization is the one thing that has hurt security on that scale.
Yeah, I used to do IT audits of AS400 systems.
I was about to bring those up. I almost used that as an example, yeah.
Every time I talk to the gray-haired AS400 administrator, is like a new, brand new associate. Tell me about your security. We got the most secure system ever. There's no known vulnerabilities for that box in the corner of my office.
Exactly.
It's true though.
Yeah. I mean, I used to do a lot of interviews with people and I'd be like, hang on, right. if you logged in and you saw this, what's your next move? And they're like, I have no idea. I've never seen that in my life. And it's like, well, it's an AS400. So just like, show me how you'd hack it. And they're like, no idea. My university course didn't cover this because they're expecting me to use Metasploit. It's like, well, yeah, good luck with
that. I can't
that.
Even Google it because the forum went down 2 years
exactly.
ago.
Exactly. So sometimes yeah. like the most esoteric piece of hardware kit that you have that's still running there is sometimes the most secure because no one knows how to hack it.
Yeah. So we've talked a lot about the security with AI, the weaponization of AI. At DEF CON and Black Hat, I imagine you were inundated with the defensive uses of AI and how different flavors of AI have permeated every vendor product, it seems, in the security world.
It's actually really fascinating because it really wasn't like that, especially like Black Hat, which is very sort of, very commercialized thing. We saw this at InfoSec in the UK as well. Two very large vendor spaces, as with RSA at the beginning of this year as well. Generally, when something new comes out or is on the horizon, it gets embedded into every marketing piece ever, right? And is pushed down everyone's throat. Like I remember when quantum was a thing, everything had quantum in it somehow, right? And then a couple of years ago, AI sort of started to come in, not in the same way it is now, but people dabbled with that and like, oh yeah, it's AI powered. And you like ask a couple of questions and be like, well, actually it's just a couple of if else statements in our regex, right? It's not really AI. But I was pleasantly surprised that walking around any of those vendor spaces, it was not shoved down everyone's throats, right? Those vendor spaces, the marketing teams, I think have learned enough that hang on, we need to sort of scale back on this because it's not working because people start to look at it. And I think actually now I think about it, I think the reason for its conspicuous absence is that people are really scared of tools that have AI in them because they're like, hang on, where is my data going? How is it being used? How is it being scraped? You mentioned earlier about AI being embedded into, sort of email clients. And so people, there's a lot of companies out there that won't turn it on because they're like, hang on, it's reading all of our emails. It's able to, where is that going off to? And so I think people are really nervous about that. So I think the marketing teams have kind of gone, maybe we don't push it too much because it's just going to scare people away because they'll be like, hang on, we don't want AI in our network. We don't want AI in our AD, et cetera.
It could be that we've passed the crest of that last year and the year before. And I've been seeing the headlines, according to a study recently published by the Journal of Hospitality Marketing and Management, customers were less likely to buy a product with AI stamped on it. We operate in the third-party risk management space. And to your point about like, I, as a user of this software package, I need assurance that you're not going to abuse my data, that you're not collecting this for a purpose that's outside of my expectation or outside of, our agreed upon contract and sort of the assurances over where's that data going? How's it being protected? Is it being anonymized? What are you doing with it? All those concerns around the use of AI is what led HITRUST toward the path of working on AI assurance offerings. So we've been doing a lot of work this year on exactly that, communicating to end users and communicating users of software. Hey, this company does use an ML model or an LLM inside this product, but here's all the things they're doing to protect the data. Here's how they can demonstrate to you that they're, doing everything above board. So there's certainly a need. And every time I see a product that's got AI this or AI that, it's for a while, it was like Salt Bae sprinkling the salt on top of the steak. That was AI on top of the vendor marketing. Are you being engaged by any customers to attack AI models or AI-enabled systems? And I don't know if that's yet reached the commercial prominence yet.
It has not reached that point yet. We still do a lot of smart building integration testing. So, we've worked with a couple of financial institutions where they're like, we have this smart building and everything's interconnected. How can we make sure that's safe? We haven't yet got to those clients, even the more mature ones, like, hang on, we're bringing in AI. We need you to test. Can you attack it? I think there's so many companies out there that are just rushing to get something out, and they're just building on top of crap, to be honest. And it's just going really poorly for them. I don't think they've hit that maturity level of like, hang on, we need to test this before we put it out to the public. They just want to get it out there. And that's always a terrible idea.
Well, yeah. And we know functionality often leads before security. And as a result, a lot of the regulations are written in blood, right? Oops, that bad thing happened. Mm-hmm. We got to do something to prevent it happening. So we're hoping that we can avoid that.
Yeah. And it's always way more expensive to do security after the fact than it is before.
Oh, yeah.
It's something that a lot of people don't realize. Like they called us in to do this initial security assessment. Like maybe they're designing a new building and they're like, oh, hang on, from a physical perspective, is this a good idea? And, you know, they'll go, oh my God, this is like crazy money for this consultation of this design. But I can guarantee you, if you do it, if you build all of that and then you bring us in afterwards, it's going to cost a lot more money to rectify those mistakes. And we've seen that in the past. And it's the same with like, if you're doing software development, getting security involved early is cheaper.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. You've got a chapter in your book about that. The most expensive physical security door ever in a bad design building.
Oh, could, that one. Yes.
You could walk around it.
Yes. Yes.
No, but I think it's true in AI as well, which is why we see stuff like the Biden administration in the U.S. did an executive order on AI for critical deployments of AI. And they recommend, red teaming before deployment. And a lot of the AI research and recommendations from really well thought out publications recommends, do this security evaluation of the model before you deploy it and then continually after you deploy it. Because if something goes wrong and you realize after the fact that you should have done something, it's going to be someone else telling you to do it. And it's better maybe if you can drive it up front to prevent that bad thing from happening.
And like you say, it's that continuous process, because as with digital stuff, there's always new ways of doing things, right? It's the same type of attacks underneath, the vulnerability is the same, but those new ways of doing those attacks changes constantly every day. Like we've seen a recent LLM that was, I say hacked in the loosest possible term there, by realizing that you can bypass a lot of the safeguards by using a language that the AI understands, but the humans haven't thought of how do we do this, right? So there was a recent LLM where they used Pig Latin to bypass all the safe controls because the AI was able to understand what the person was trying to say and was able to translate that into what it needed to do. Because when it was looking at the safeguards, it's like, well, these words don't match up, so I don't have to worry about that. So it was a fascinating attack. So this continuous testing of your environments and your AI systems and your digital controls, there are new attacks every day. So it's fascinating to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. And if we're successful in the recommendations that we're putting out in our list of AI controls for deployed AI systems takes off, then we hope that more and more of these deployed AI systems actually feature these checks, these safeguards, these guardrails, from humans, not just from other systems doing the scanning, to really find this stuff and prevent the bad things from happening before they happen. Because there is new threats for AI systems, just as much as there is, if not more so, as there's new ways to do the normal stuff in security faster at a better scale. Like it's different sides of the same problem, the security for AI versus security with AI and security against AI. So it's really cool to be able to have this conversation and talk about maybe some of the stuff we don't talk about as much at HITRUST, but we read a lot about in the news, security with AI. And let's talk to a hacker. And who better to talk to? Yeah, I love your book.
Well, ethical hacker, I should reiterate, I've always been on the good side.
Of course, yeah, we are too.
A lot of people think that you can only be an ethical hacker if you've done some bad stuff in the past. Given the security clearances I've had in the past, there is no way that I've had anything bad in my past. So there are ethical hackers and there are criminal hackers.
Yes, yes. And we are on the side of the good. We do corporate security. One more thing I really wanted to foot stomp is sort of, we talked about all of these tools that help the red teams attack at more scale. What are some high-level recommendations for maybe the human part that all companies can implement to help sort of protect or build awareness or whatever against these AI-enabled attacks?
Yeah, I think it's building that awareness piece, right? It's giving demonstrations of what the art of the possible is, not to scare them, but to just keep them informed. And be like, look, just be aware that people can clone your voice from 20 seconds of it. People can take a single image of you and create a video off of that. And we've shown demonstrations. If you check out my wife's YouTube channel, you'll see demonstrations of this. It's just giving them a kind of like insight. You don't have to scare people. Never scare people. Just be like, hey, I just want you to be aware that this is a thing, right? So next time you get a phone call, or next time you get a video call or a voicemail or something, just take a step back, right? And realize that there are key factors at play that the criminals are trying to get you to do, right? They're trying to put you under a time pressure. They're trying to get you to do something. They're trying to like make you emotional, right? So if your first reaction of getting some kind of communication is like, oh God, I've got to do this, then that's a red flag to sort of step back. And one of the greatest things that you can do is just say it out loud. Read it through aloud, right? I know you're probably in an office, but read it off to a colleague. But if you read an email, for example, or a message out loud, it takes you out of that psychological area that you don't want to be in. And it makes you realize, hang on, this just doesn't seem right. So that's the biggest bit of advice, is just give some awareness to your staff. And also don't punish them, right? If they click a link, well, they've clicked the link, right? Explain to them why it's a bad idea. Show them why it's a bad idea. But don't berate them, right? They're just trying to do their job, right? And just so because it's security, you need other things in place for them.
Yeah, great advice. And thank you so much for spending time with me and talking about this topic. I wish I had 3 hours to talk to you. Big fan of your book, and thanks for all the work you're doing. And and this is really cool for me, so I really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you so much, Jeremy. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, Jeremy, there was a lot there, and you guys had a rich conversation talking about the topic, and maybe not so much what AI is, but also what AI may not yet be.
That's right. That's right. The tooling for everything that AI touches is sort of still in its infancy, right? Because it's really first generation on the Gen AI stuff, even though it's maybe third or fourth generation. But for a lot of us, it's the first iteration of us putting AI technology into our corporate platforms. And it's got a lot of room to grow and a lot of room to expand. And it sounds like that's sort of the case for the placement in the bad guys toolkit. While there are certain first use cases that are becoming popular, you talked about open source intelligence gathering and deep fakes and the kind of things that, you know, we immediately thought about how could generative AI be used for security, bad guys being bad. You hear about it all the time. Let's do spear phishing at scale. Let's write really customized, bespoke phishing emails at big, big scale using generative AI. And that's becoming true, and that is true. But what's less true is the tooling inside of like the Kali Linux and the other hacker toolkits having like really integrated uses of generative AI. And that could change over time in the same way that kind of our corporate tooling may have more and more application of AI as it's been around longer and more and more people understand how to use it. And so I thought it was a good point in time kind of snapshot of how the bad guys' tooling is and is not being affected by AI. But certainly this will all evolve and change, just like the entire AI landscape is evolving and changing.
I'm still struck by the fact that, you know, AI, and specifically generative AI, just adds efficiency to the bad actor. You know, it gives them tooling that they can, you know, become more efficient with. So I tend to think about the fact that social engineering continues to be a social activity. It requires some level of, you know, human engagement. Even if you gain access through a fish, you still have to gain a point of presence in the environment and move laterally in the environment. I mean, those things still require, you know, the criminal actors and the experts that are, you know, the bad people doing those types of things to operate, as we've talked about, like, for example, in our ransomware episode, other things like that. You know, another thing that I find interesting is like the fact that there are ways that AI systems are prompted and interacted with that may not be naturally obvious to me as a defender. Like I think about, you know, the example about using an alternative language like Pig Latin, I think it was, as a way of, you know, doing prompt injection as a mechanism to, you know, ask an AI system to generate an outcome that maybe the defensive layer of the system won't detect and won't mitigate, or alternative forms of input, such as using graphics as a prompt as opposed to using ASCII text as a prompt, for example, plain text. So yeah, it's just it's a fascinating thing that have I really considered as a leader all the different ways that my AI system could be defeated? You know, I'm not sure that we fully have yet. So it's a very much a green field in terms of understanding the risk landscape and what we need to do about it.
And with FC, we've got a world-class physical security expert on our hands. And while that wasn't the focus of today's episode, like, it would be criminally erroneous to not mention how good this individual is at physical security. His book we mentioned is called How I Robbed Banks and Other Such Places, came out a few years ago. I read the whole thing when it came out. Big fan. I've been thinking about FC ever since. It's a real privilege to have him on the show. If you're at all interested in sort of his exploits and kind of how to defend against some of the ways he breaks into banks and other such places, two ways. One is there's another podcast called Darknet Diaries, episode 66. They interviewed FC and he talked all about just that. Really good listen. And also check out his book. You can find it anywhere. You find it in your other books. So he was a really good guest to have, real privilege. And we're very thankful to FC for spending his time with us.
You know, in thinking about this conversation, it reminds me that almost every time I've had a red team exercise conducted or an ethical hacking or penetrative test done, and I'm not talking about just a scan attempt to compromise the website, I'm talking about a true on exploitative test. Many, many times the attacks are successful, and it's almost always a limit of the imagination of the defender. You know, we don't anticipate what a person with evil intentions might do or how they use our technology against us. And everything I think about when I hear this conversation is we have not potentially imagined every way that an AI application that we are deploying can be compromised and used against us. And I think that's a real important takeaway for us to consider to keep at the forefront. We really enjoy bringing this content to you. It continues to be some of the most enjoyable and interesting work that Jeremy and I both get to do in our journey to not only help the customers we serve with solid security programs, build good assurance programs and the like, but also just our opportunity to become smarter and more expert at understanding the space and the risk and the threat landscape that we all face. So glad you join us on this journey, you know, every few weeks. And we do ask and encourage you to give us a review and subscribe. Let us know you're out there and continue to give us feedback on the work we're doing here and the opportunity we have to become smarter together in our journey on trust.